Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks, welcome to one more edition of Politics Done Right. I'm Egberto Willis, your host. Thank you for being with me one more Saturday. We're going to have some fun today. We're going to talk about benevolent dinners given away here for students. Is it an excuse? There's no excuse. What's the word? But anyhow, how do we start today? Where do I want to start today? Look, there is a story out there that is really intriguing me. I'm just going to touch on it a bit today, but I'm really going to handle that likely on my KPFC Politics Done Right show, because I think I want to learn a bit more. But I know thus far, I am most surprised by the reaction from many on the left. I'm very surprised from the black intelligentsia. Those responses actually concerns me. So we'll tackle that problem at some other point. About today, we have a pretty good subject to handle. We're going to talk about a pretty interesting topic. But I imagine everybody noted that Hillary Clinton she did it again for president today. What I forgot to do today, I have a new entry into the beer show. Let me play that for you, and then we'll take it from there.
Welcome to Politics Done Right. I am your host, Egberto Willis. This is the progressive program that will take the mystery out of politics. This is the program that will encourage you to make sure government becomes we the people. Whether you are liberal, conservative, or otherwise, you get to air your point of view. Remember, you can also send me a tweet to EGBERTOWILLIES, that is, at Egberto Willis. Let us engage. It is politics done right.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, that's a new entry into Politics Done Right Coffee Party Radio. I hope you like that. We're going to keep doing a few things out here. But anyhow, the real story again today, well, it's not a story. It's an intriguing story for me to have seen Rachel Dolezal actually becoming, after having been the presidente of the NAACP, to be outed by her own family that, guess what, she's white. To which I say, wow, are we coming to the realization that racial identity is, we're approaching that point where racial identity is really becoming, really is, having very little. No, I'm not talking about culture now. Culture is a different thing, and it has a lot of different permutations, a lot of different, a lot of different things that one goes through. But I am not the type that would ever tell someone that anybody has only say in who they are, what they or anything of that sort, and I think that's where, as a people, we better be consistent. Because in this discussion about Rachel Dolezal, I think some consistency is needed. One of the reasons I did my blog yesterday, I started to think about it, and I wanted it to be a little bit more, the story to be a little bit more cooked out, a little bit more before actually having a point of view, a position on this particular issue. I'm not going to discuss it, but I think, unless something else shows up, I may be discussing this particular issue on my Thursday. To tell you, but just in a short synopsis, I think compassion, excoriation, Education should be the name of the day. I can tell you bluntly, there's a little piece of me, honestly, in watching her adopt a culture that she was not born with, that actually gives me a sort of, I want to say a sort of pleasure, a sort of good feeling that we just, I don't want to say exchange places, because a lot of people are going to go into some more deep analysis I'm not willing to go to right now, but I think as opposed to many celebrating this as some brave thing done to a, we should try to look at the positive that could be out of this scenario. Anyway, you know what time it is? Do you know?
It's time for the weekly blog post.
Well, as you know, there is a group of billionaires that are giving much of their wealth away. While it is a great thing to do, the American economic problem demands a systemic change. The answer is not the benevolence of a few multi-billionaires. So today, we will talk about solutions. That's what to talk about. Anyhow, I wrote this post, and the post was called Billionaires Given Simply Hides a Severe Defect in Capitalism. That was the actual title was Benevolent Billionaires Given Away Fortune is No Failed Economic System. Really believe that? As our most intelligent Sarah Palin would say.
You betcha.
Anyhow, billionaires given most or a large percentage of your fortune makes a... How benevolent. 7% of billionaires in the world bandwagon, yet one must ask more important questions. Was there sort of wealth accumulation, or let me back up, was accumulation a direct result of their worth to society at large? And by the way, I have a little typo in there. How do the choices that they make with the donated money relate to real needs in our society, in our world? One of the reasons many watching the above piece about these benevolent billionaires is met without apprehension is because we have been programmed into that we live in a meritocracy, and billionaires have earned wealth. Let me repeat. One, many watching the above piece of these benevolent about these billionaires met without apprehension is because we have been programmed into we live in a meritocracy, and that these billionaires have earned their wealth. Well, to be clear, I do believe Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and all these billionaires giving away their money are good people. I think they're good people. They're a major part of our economy, and they're playing the rules of our capitalist society. The problem is that whereas many have been in the belief that capitalism really affects the efficient allocation of resources, that's the biggest fallacy, actually, the efficient allocation of resources. Again, let me qualify what capitalism as practiced here is today. It is not the efficient allocation of resources. It is the efficient allocation created resources. Bill Gates is a very smart man, but he is no smarter than engineers, software developers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, his wealth was developed from the accumulated brain trust of thousands who should really be partaking in that wealth. A pre-MS-DOS, I don't know if you guys backstory of Bill Gates, if I don't get enough story, to the engineers at Xerox, to the creators of the semiconductors, the building materials that created the factories, to the taxpayers investing in schools and they should have rightfully owned or taken in those gains. Again, Bill Gates, but Bill Gates worth the $70-80 billion that he has. That is called legal theft from the creators of all to put together through. If capitalism was really the efficient resources, that accumulated wealth would have been distributed to many people, many more people. A similar case can be made by a single billionaire, but those who supposedly didn't inherit, but supposedly made it through the appreciation of their corporation. So if foreign exploitation, which none of us really want to see, tax rate of at least 90% or higher on wealth, the only mathematical way to rebalance the aberrations within capitalism. I can then deem how best in the continued growth of society. Billionaires taking away money, few that decide what they believe are the best issues to tackle. It is an insular view without scrutiny. Many will object to this. It's been methodically indoctrinated partly by the effecting of the tenets with the manifesto on the blog post. I have a couple of examples that need to be cleaned up as well. Think tanks thought of authenticity successful until each American asserts their worth, demand the peace of theirs, and will continue. Both Republicans and Democrats have been attempting populism as that the middle class may begin sharpening their pitchforks. One can only hope the 2016 ballot box or pitchfork getting rid of all those while continuing to carry the water of plutocracy. Oh, telephone number 646-929-2495. Again, the number is 646-929-2495. I would love to hear you no matter what side of the aisle, whether you're liberal, whether you're conservative. I hope you heard my new promo that comes in. I really want to. You think I'm full of it by saying real tax the holy hell of wealth after? Don't you think that after all, not based on an individual's worth in an abilities of what we call capitalism in society? Think about whether Bill Gates is worth more than a neurosurgeon that's practicing in the middle. Yeah, that is not, well, you know what. Think about that. Important thing for us to examine. Because, again, I'm not saying these people did anything in the game. They are playing to. The question is, are these rules the best? Many would say, our particular form of capitalism, we made all these. Well, yeah, we made a hell of a lot of it. How many of those that, however, advances that benefit the vast majority. No, I mean it can be quantified. If supposedly a equitable system would be less than ours, I personally equitable system can be proven to be more. But again, your job as the citizens of this country. Experiment is performed. That's after World War II, right? Based on after World War II and based on that we've made thus far, I think it was practical. But anyway, let me get to that. It's too Who do I have?
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
How you doing, John? Talk to me.
Good. You know you're
fading in and out, right?
Yeah, I mean, because you're fading out. I can hear
I didn't know that. How bad is it?
It's pretty bad. I mean, you can hear about 5 seconds of what you say, and then the next 5 seconds you can't hear it. So anyway, I'll try to speak, and hopefully, I don't know what you want to do, but anyway, yeah, I mean, I agree with you full-heartedly about this. You know, this is something that we need to approach as a society, and obviously, you know, we're on the same page, mostly economically. And, you know, friends of mine, you know, talk to me and they say, you know, why don't you put more money in the market? And, you know, I got 8% last year and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, I don't want to support these companies that are actually fighting against the American people. They're degrading these people by paying them poor wages. And so why should I support that? And why should I make money when these people these corporations are making money off of, you know, paying their workers low wages? And I just don't want to do it. And so I mean, that's kind of the way I feel about the situation. And I don't really have a lot of respect. I mean, I used to have a little bit more respect for Buffett, but I mean, he started criticizing Elizabeth Warren, and you know, he's satisfied with the game as it is. And you know, the game has to change. I mean, the tax system, in my view, is unsustainable, and hopefully, it seems like people are talking more and more. I heard Bill de Blasio talking on the Daily Show about, you know, increasing the tax rates on the rich. This really has to be a theme that is talked about more. I heard Bernie Sanders talked about raising the rates to 50%. Right now, the highest marginal tax rate is 39.6. So I just think that that you're on the right track with this. And I hope that somehow we can build momentum. I think it's already happening. I mean, if you look at what happened in yesterday's vote, I think that's a great triumph for the Democratic Party and also for the people of America to see that they're turning left. When I called Joaquin Castro on Thursday's office and I told him, you know, look, you know, you know, you're not going to prosper as a conservative Democrat. You know, that's
exactly
not going to get you. You know, the party is moving left. And so if you're going to continue to play these games, you know, right now there's a great state representative who's in the Warren and Sanders wing, who's talking about, you know, payday loans and talking about populism and trying to get the middle class and the working class to where they can try to get to where they were, at least, you know, during the 70s, during the 60s, during the 50s, during the 40s, when it was really the best time, economic time, for the middle class. And so, you know, I think he got the message, and I actually got a call the next morning, yesterday morning, from OFA trying to, you know, dissuade me of my views. And,
it's so funny because Obama has all these groups. And before I forget, folks, please, this is a call-in show, 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. I really want to hear from you. There are quite a few of you here, but it's not pushing one to let me know you want to talk. But you're so right, John. I have been on Facebook. We are part of this this group where we try to push issues. And the thing about it is right now, this particular group is in the tank with wanting to give President Obama fast track and wanting to support the passage of this treaty. And my thing is, like, I am sorry. First of all,
it's not about Obama. I really don't care that Obama is the one who wants this Trans-Pacific partnership, because that is not enough. I mean, for all the times that we have been, for every treaty, we hear the same exact thing. And we have always had the same exact results. And, you know, the reality is, today we're talking about billionaires, right? These treaties are great for billionaires, right? Because what actually occurs is exactly what we know is going to occur. You get normalization of wages. Why wouldn't you get normalization of wages if you're competing against people that make a hell of a lot less than Americans? And that is what Lori Wallach from Global Trade, that group that is working with citizens.org to ensure that TPP is not passed. There is no logical reason we should believe that if we've added a whole lot, we've reduced a whole lot of tariffs, et cetera, for countries that pay their citizens a lot less, for countries that don't have the environmental standards that we have, for countries that don't have the legal framework to protect their workers than we have, that somehow that is not going to give them an advantage over the American worker. And at the same time, to believe that our businesses who have laws that protect the way they can keep money overseas and not pay taxes on that money overseas are not going to take advantage of those benefits to help their bottom line, their shareholders. And there's only one group that continues to be held to hold the bag, and that's the average American citizen.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, also the investor-state dispute settlement, I mean, that's probably the thing that bothers me the most about the trade deal. I mean, the trade deal is awful in itself, you know, don't get me wrong.
Right.
It's like, you know, pick or choose. But, I mean, you know, when you talk about, you know, the increase that could possibly happen in prescription drugs, you know, and also the financial rules, the Consumer Protection Agency. I mean, all those things will be under attack under this, you know, international court system. And who's going to be making the decision for that? Other corporate, you know, entities, you know, people who automatically, you know, favor corporations. I mean, it's just so ridiculous. And all the privacy rules are so ridiculous. I mean, I know they say, well, it's that way with every trade deal. Well, it shouldn't be that way, you know.
And not only that, how good have these trade deals been for the average American worker? We can show a continual decline in middle class, a continual decline in wages. So what we have to do is keep the pressure on these politicians. And I'm sorry that the president, you know what is most hurtful to me, John, and I think this is something that we need to take into account. The people who want this bill so badly are Republicans. They want it badly. Now, they never give. In other words, I would actually go for this bill under a scenario like this. Mathematically speaking, if we give you this trade bill, if you invest X amount of $1 trillion in infrastructure, if you ensure that anybody that we can prove lost a job because of lower wages overseas or whatever, we get some sort of a compensation to mitigate that. But you know why they will never do that? Because they will figure, well, to support that type of a policy, we would have to have tax increases that just may mitigate that increased profit that we get from getting the deal in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I've been reading stories today about how Pelosi might try to bargain for this deal, you know, because there's going to be another vote on Tuesday on the TAA.
Yes.
Part
right.
of it, but I mean, how could they change so many minds? I mean, 302 people voted against it. I mean, they need I think it's 217 now because a couple people are missing to have it passed. So I mean, I just don't see that happening. It's just too far ahead of it. I mean,
well,
what could
actually, I actually see it happening. My concern is that this was just, if you listen to Pelosi is a very smart woman. And she knows her caucus, and she knows the House. Notice she didn't say, we're stopping this bill. She said, we're slowing down
this bill, which tells me there's a lot that's happening that we don't know about.
Right.
Think about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, think about it, but, I mean, you can also, I mean, somehow if they separate the TAA from the, what is it, the TPA, which is the actual fast track, and,
right.
I mean, then I guess possibly it could pass, because, I mean, that had 219 votes yesterday.
Right.
So, I mean,
right.
that would pass. I mean, but, I mean, the question is how many of those people who voted for that, and there were 28 Democrats who voted for that, would they still pass it, knowing that if TAA is taken out, will that still pass? I mean, I guess that's going to be the big question. And
you know what I think will be their justification for doing that? I think their justification for doing that is actually going to be, well, the TAA was taking money out of Medicare, okay, $750 million out of Medicare. So because of that, we voted against that, and we would somehow come back and do the other another day. But we know that other day, once Republicans get the trade deal, and, you know, this is difficult because you have a president working with Republicans on something they want badly. There are so many things the American people want badly that Republicans simply have not budged on. My question then is, why? First of all, what I wrote a blog post last month or probably 6 weeks ago, John, and it said, "What game is President Obama playing?" I'm going to ask you that. What game is President Obama playing? This seems out of character.
Yeah, I think it is, but I mean, I don't understand it. The two things that I'm seeing that are constantly being talked about are the fact that China is being aggressive. They're building, you know, these
islands,
right? And they're basically being really aggressive and saying, you know, things that were before they were called international waters. Now they're saying, no, this is our territorial space. Don't go into it. And so that's a big problem. And so all the people who the neighbors are, you know, the Vietnam, Malaysia, Brunei, all those countries, you know, they feel threatened. And so they want it to be kind of a protection against China. And I mean, I don't agree with that. I'm just saying that's
right.
What their explanation is. And so so that's what their explanation is. And also, they also see the movement of the BRIC countries, which are, you know, Brazil, India, China,
right.
and Russia. And so they see that they're forming alliances. And so they want to have all these other they want to be aligned with the TPT countries. And they also want the TTIP, which are all the European
countries. The Atlantic,
countries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so So I mean that's the theory. I mean I think I just don't agree. I mean I am kind of concerned about China's aggression, but I mean that's not how you counter
but
it.
You know
I
what?
Mean,
it's so funny about that China aggression, and this is why you wonder about how we think and how the policy wonks are actually thinking. I am originally from Central America, Panama. You can go out there to Central America, and I know folks in Africa and all these other places. China has been waging a silent, let's call it a silent war, but it's not a war. It's a silent economic war for decades, okay? While we have been bombing and blowing things up and having contractors rebuild other nations with shoddy workmanship, China has been in Angola, China has been in Panama, China has been in Brazil, China has been in Colombia, Venezuela, all these places helping out, building infrastructure, and not only, you know, having their workers assimilate, because they don't do it very good at assimilation in general for I don't know what reasons, but they have their folks in all these other countries that are actually working, they're working economically. And while we are so concerned about war, that's all we think about, war and blowing things up, they have been actually making alliances. They've been making friends. So what I think we're going to find is it is almost as if we're doing this because we've left the ball for so long. You know, we've ignored everybody for so long. And you remember how long ago Obama said he pivoted to the Pacific, right? Well,
right.
How good is that pivot working? Is a pivot meaning just a trade deal? In other words, you sell your soul, a friend? Is that what we're doing?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I mean, you know, one thing that I think people should consider is that, I mean, we already have tremendous trade with China.
I mean, yes.
We don't need a trade deal to, I mean, look at everything, you know, I mean, all the clothes that, or most clothes that people buy, you know, are made in China or other, you know, countries that don't have, you know, strong you know, economic representation. I mean, most of mm-hmm. them are, and so, you know, I mean, this is, I just think that, I just don't understand why there is such a need to do these trade deals besides, you know, to give corporate entities more power. And that's that's one of the biggest problems in our society is they have too much power. I mean, it's just astounding to me that people don't understand, you know, that how corporate society is just dominating, and
right.
And it's a mindset also. I mean, people come out at like out of college and they're stuck with so much debt that it, you know, then they have to like maneuver through, you know, the corporate lifestyle, you know, when they end up working for these corporations, you know, because I mean most of these corporations are the ones that pay the most money, and
right.
it sets them into this mindset that, you know, it's hard to get out of that. I mean, you know, you look at cross tabs from all the polling, and it's amazing, you know, how, you know, all the younger voters, the younger you are, the more idealistic and the more you want change. And I know a lot of people will say, well, that's been that way for a while, you know. But, I mean, it wasn't necessarily that way for my generation, because my generation, you know, they embraced the Reagan Revolution. And
right, which
you know,
was
and
terrible,
so
but we did.
Yeah, and so, you know, definitely something I'm not proud of. I mean, I didn't personally. I mean, I fought against it as much as I could.
Right.
But, I mean, that is what happened. I mean, and so, you know, it does give me a lot of hope to see the younger people, you know, the millennials, and, you know, they know that it's so wrong. You know, 20, 30 years ago, it wasn't that way. You didn't have all of this debt. And this is all
right.
Going back to what you talked about earlier, because people don't want to pay taxes. That's the reason why the students have all this debt. I mean, it's really is that simple. I mean, of course there are a lot of complicating situations, but I mean, if you look at the rates of taxation and how much they've gone down, you know, at the state level, I mean, that's why they can't get a decent education. That's why they have to pay so much more money than people paid, you know, 20 or 30 years ago. And it's really sad, you know, because I mean they feel very different, you know, than our generation. You know, I think we're
well,
pretty
you know,
much
per the Powell memo or the Powell manifesto. Here's the interesting thing, John. It isn't difficult. I mean, first of all, the amount of taxes that people would end up paying if we just had marginal tax increases to take care of the things we really need to take care of would be minimal. Yes, those in the top 1.1% would be paying a whole lot more taxes, but they also take a whole lot more resources out of our economy, and I think that is justified. Now, but what we have been, what the right, these think tanks have been very effective in doing is having people believe that these marginal tax increases to provide all these services would actually make life much more difficult for them, not really telling them the reality that actually these increases in tax rates would actually make their lives better. Not only make their lives better from an economic standpoint, but make their lives better for just, think about, I don't know how San Antonio is right now. I can tell you Houston, we have become pothole city because we've been trying to save so much money on not fixing roads as we should. Infrastructure is falling apart. We say this ad nauseum. When you ride over a whole lot of potholes, eventually it costs you more money. When you go ahead and have poor infrastructure and all these other types of issues, you spend more time in traffic. That's also money. So if you calculate what you have lost from saving a few dollars in taxes, you're probably spending a whole lot more for what you have lost by not having spent that money in taxes. And that is what think tanks don't do for you. They don't tell you how much that traffic jam is costing you. They don't tell you how much that pothole is costing you. They don't tell you how much all the interest that you are paying to the plutocracy, to the bankers, how much that is really costing society as a whole. They don't tell you that that student who has a student loan won't be buying a home, and because they won't be buying a home, they won't be buying refrigerators and curtains and seeds for the plants in the backyard and a pool or whatever it is that they're going to do. They don't tell you these things. And anybody who have studied economics 101 knows one simple fact, and that simple fact is it's not about the total amount of money in an economy. It's about how much or how fast that money within the economy is actually circulated. So there's so much that goes untold. And what I hope that we do here in these types of conversations that we have, John, in these types of blogging that we have, is to actually help slowly, one at a time, try to enlighten folks to say, look, you can pay an extra dollar to have a better life, and it's worth it, don't you think?
Yeah, right. I agree with you. But one thing that people have to start thinking about is that not everything, you know, has to deal with just, you know, being selfish. You know,
right.
Just, you know, I mean, you have to have compassion and empathy for that child who, you know, is born with the birth defect or is born with a really horrible condition, but their parents don't have money to pay for that. And should that child die, or should that child be, you know, be in pain and in misery because their parents aren't doing that? And so, you know, we have to address this situation. I know we've had a little bit of a slight disagreement about Vermont and, you know, the approach of why single payer wasn't put into place, why when it was actually passed by the legislature and then Governor Shumlin decided not to bring it up, and, you know, for political reasons, and now he's saying he's not even running for another term. And so, I mean, that makes it even more strange. But I mean, you know, what the tax increase would be, you know, it was basically $2.7 billion that was the revenue they had, I think, from 2013. And they would need $2 billion more, which is a huge tax increase. What they were finally going to settle on was about a 10% increase in the state tax. And right now, I mean, it was about, you know, the lowest tax rates are at about 4%, the highest are about 9%. So that would go up to like 14% for the lowest tax rates and, you know, 19%. And then there would also be taxes on business. And he didn't want to put that in place. But one thing, you know, if you look at all of the countries that have, you know, either single payer or basically a system where it's not
universal
single
healthcare.
Payer, but it is universal health care, every country has a VAT tax. And I know you
right.
think that is the wrong way to approach it.
It's a regressive tax, yes.
It is a regressive tax, and I agree with that. But, I mean, these are questions that people who are really serious about single payer, and they need to start talking about how we're going to pay for this, and are we going to pay for this through a VAT tax, or are we going to pay for this through just an increase in taxes, you know, for let's say, like in Vermont, they did the state tax and they wanted an increase in the business tax, a pretty large increase, about a 10% increase compared to what it is now.
What I would like is a progressive tax, a surcharge, and not only that, but we need to have, from a mathematical standpoint, right? There are a group of folks in this country, and this is hard to say, and it's hard to explain, and it's hard for people to see, because most people are going to say, these people all played by the rules, which is actually true. All these people that have gouged and pilfered the middle class, that's a term that I love to use because it's striking, but the reality is everything that they did, those things were legal. Would I have done those things? Probably not. Not only that, more than likely, if I started making a whole bunch of money, I would be giving it away like crazy. That's the type of person that I am. I mean, if a lot of money is coming in, a lot of money is going to go out. I'm not the type that believes in wealth accumulation for the sake of wealth accumulation. What can Bill Gates do with $80 billion? I mean, well, good for him. He's giving it away. Good for Buffett. Buffett is giving it away. But the thing that I mentioned in the blog post that I just read is an important concept here, or important thing. When you have private citizens that are multi-billionaire giving away their fortune, they decide what is important to them, and they spend the money in forms that's important to them, to the way they see it. Bill Gates is one of these people who believe strongly in things like magnet schools
Common Core.
Sort of things. Right. So he is going to support those particular types of issues. Now, the thing about it is that's not democratic at all. That is actually, to put it bluntly, a sort of soft fascism. But nobody wants to say that. The reality is we're putting the well-being of a country, or what the good that's being done, to a few people. When, as I really want people to, I think one of the biggest problems in our society, John, is folks don't know their worth. In other words, the average American doesn't know that they're worthy. Nobody's given them anything, and for the sake of giving them anything, the country cannot exist without them. Bill Gates could not have made the money without the cumulative knowledge of hundreds of thousands of people. But our system allows for him to be the benefactor of the results. And I think that's a problem that, you know, it's hard to explain, you know, because, you know, we all build upon each other's knowledge. It's hard to explain, but I think it is something that all of us need to start getting into people's head. You are part of the success of this country. And to impose these large taxes on excess wealth, whatever we define as excess wealth as a society, and it is as for the society to define. People like to have Rand Paul, what type of philosophy?
Libertarian.
Libertarian.
Really?
People like to have a libertarian stance where they believe they are self-sufficient, that they attained is through their own doing. When somebody like us, folks like us, we know that all of this is cumulative. But right now I have another call. I'm keeping you hot, John. Let me go to 412. 412, you're on the air. Talk to me.
Hi, Egberto. It's Greg Rusak. Hey, John, how are you doing, too?
Good, good. Good to hear from you, Greg.
Come on in, Greg.
Egberto, you finally hit the nail on the head, and that is, the system, the way that it works today, is possible only because we as citizens allow it. And it's only because some of our fellow citizens actually believe in the lie of objectivism and libertarianism and trickle-down economics and the great man theory that allows for us to worship people like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett under the lie that someday, somehow, we might also attain such great wealth and power. It's such an obvious lie that it still continues to mystify me how some of our friends, people you and I both know, will lean in those directions as if that kind of excess, those kinds of excesses are somehow good for society, and they're not. They're the epitome of selfishness and narcissism. And one of the things that will have to change over time, and I've done my best to raise two 20-somethings to understand all this, and that is you have to fight the system. You have to fight it, because if you don't, you will be defeated. And
now,
Can I cut you right there a second? Yeah, you can't, because I'm gonna finish my thought, and that is this.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Egberto, when I say we, I mean you, I mean me, I mean John. Allow this to go on because we don't challenge it hard enough. We're not challenging the system hard enough. I call my elected representatives on a regular basis, too. I do. I call them all the time. It doesn't really matter because my voice doesn't count because I don't have any money. And until we get that root problem addressed and do it with force, I don't think there is opportunity for change. We're going to continue to be entertained by bread and circus ad infinitum.
Right. By the way, did you see that video that I put on a blog a few months ago, Bread and Circus, that was done by Move to Amend in Utah?
I probably did, but I have to admit that I see lots of videos, so I can't quote it.
I should send that to you because it was a great video on Bread and Circus and how the plutocracy actually works to keep you calm so that people don't react. I want to add a corollary to what you just said because you're correct that we have to fight. To fight, we have to build an army. To build an army, we have to have leaders. To have leaders, we have to have followers. In other words, people who believe and trust those leaders. To get the followers, you have to go to their level to pull them in to your domain. Now, there are different ways to address different audiences. And this is some of the things that we go through, Greg, John, and so forth. And my job as an activist is dependent on what audience I am in with to try to find a way that I can get to them by having them have some trust in me that they won't just follow me, but that they would become those leaders that folks would also follow. And that's a difficult, difficult thing to do. And we all have to find our domains or where we can actually attain that. In your case, Greg, you will actually build a following. All of us build a following differently. I mean, we get a chance to use our honey to attract a particular kind of bee or particular kind of thing, but we all have to work ultimately together. I think all of us here know, the ones that are in this line right now, knows that we are looking at the same ball. We may be coming at the same ball, sometimes from a skewed angle, sometimes from a straight angle. It doesn't matter, but we are all looking at the same ball, and if we can always remember that, we can actually, and this isn't just talk, because I see it happening, you know. I really see it happening. It's not fast. I mean, like I mentioned, I don't know if you read the blog, I said, how is this going to change? It's either going, what did I say? I think I said it's either going to be a revolution or we're going to make the ballot box our pitchfork for a change, you know.
Yeah,
and that is what it's going to be.
You know what, Egberto, nothing would make me happier than for the ballot box to be the pitchfork.
Exactly.
But I guess I'm losing hope that Americans, especially my conservative and right-wing fellow citizens, actually will ever come around to reality. They don't seem to demonstrate any willingness to actually deal with facts.
Here's the problem, Greg. I think Gallup poll has showed something differently, and I think John can attest to this as well. The country as a whole is moving left. There are those that are remaining, as you said, and a lot of these folks are so entrenched into their belief, they can confuse or they can fool themselves, and there's not much we can do for those people right now. You know, they're going to be the last folk, and I don't even know if they're needed, really.
Right, agreed. Let's stop talking to them. It's a waste of time.
No, but what I'm saying is this. Here's the deal, though. I am talking to whoever would listen, but here's what I mean. I have no hope that there are some of these that are unreachable. But there are a lot of, right now, you're going to laugh at this. My biggest problem is with folks that I would call, and I hate to say it this way, but Obama liberals, okay? Because they simply, you guys sliced me up when I wrote that thing about Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders.
Right.
Bernie
right.
Sanders,
you sliced
right.
me up.
Right.
Correctly. Okay, that's fine. I take that. But the idea behind what I was trying to say is we want to win, right? And
yes.
I tell
it must be a win.
Right.
It cannot
it
be
must.
A compromise. We have compromised for the last 35 years, which is how we
right.
got ourselves into this predicament that we're in today, where money and power outside of our ability as citizens to have any influence in government now controls everything and is how we got where we are. And that's why,
and you know what?
That's why this notion of compromise is so silly. It's naive, and frankly, it's the formula for success and victory by the conservatives, not the liberals.
No, no, let me qualify something about compromise. There are two types of compromise. There are compromises there are two types of compromises. There's I believe in big government. I don't know how big a government John believes in, and there are reasons that I believe in big government. I believe in a lot more social programs than a lot of other folks would believe in social programs. We can compromise on gradation on issues like that, okay? Because my level of what I want may be different than yours. That's the kind of compromise that I'm talking about. Right now, we don't have that, okay? But I think if you're open to that type of compromise, you bring in a whole lot more people. Because, again, I'm a very left-wing guy. Not everybody wants to be as left-wing as I am. And I am willing to concede some of my left-wingness if I see a better good for the overall populace. That's what I'm willing to do.
Give me a concrete example of that. I'd like to understand where that compromise is for you, because I don't
let
know
me,
where
let me give an I'll give,
I don't have
let
any.
Me give you an example. Let me give you an example,
please,
okay?
Please,
I want
please.
I want nationalization of the banks. I want nationalization of the power grid. I want nationalization of all utilities. Everything that can be considered in the commons, that's what I want nationalized, okay? I want a big government because I think a big corporations really is anti-democratic. That's what I honestly really believe. Now,
yes,
I am sure
right.
John doesn't go as far as I go. Is that correct, John?
I go pretty far.
But not as far as I just said.
Right. I don't really – There's a practicality. I mean, the fact is that you know, at the end of September, there's going to have to be a budget passed, or there's going to have
mm-hmm.
to be a CR passed, and this has to happen, or we're going to have a shutdown. And now the
right.
Democrats, Obama's saying that, you know, that he's not going to sign several bills that the Republicans, you know, voted on. It wasn't a real vote, but I mean they're going to come out of the Appropriations Committee. But there has
right.
to be some kind of compromise. And yes, I agree that the last Ryan, Patty Murray, you know,
Patty Murray,
bill
yeah.
was a travesty. But I mean unfortunately, while Republicans are elected, we have to somehow come up with some kind of agreement. I mean, we just can't have the government shut down. I mean, the obvious thing against that is to actually pass a bill the way most Europeans have, European countries do it, to say your government can't shut down. It's impossible to shut down.
Right.
To actually make that part of the Constitution. If you can't agree, you just agree, have a CR put in place until you
right.
do agree. But, I mean,
right.
That's one thing we have to compromise. That we do have to compromise occasionally just for the fact that Republicans have power until they're out of power. You know, we have to have a government that functions.
Go ahead, John.
Well, another compromise is Bernie Sanders wanted single payer, and he had to be convinced by Obama to go for the ACA, because in his mind, and I agree with him, you know, the ACA was not the optimum law
at all.
And
right.
And so, but I mean, Obama convinced him, and I'm glad he voted for it. I think, you know, we've talked about this many times. All
Absolutely.
The great things that happened
yes.
in the ACA, and if you know, it's struck down by the courts, it'll be, you know, such a travesty. I don't think it will be, but if it is,
I don't think so either.
I mean,
no.
But, I mean, if it is, it'll just be, you know, such a travesty that, I mean, it'll be almost as bad as Citizens United. I mean, you could make an argument that on a pure, you know, pure level of actually hurting people, I mean, as far as contributing
It'll be
to
worse.
People's death, it could
yes.
be worse, you know, worse. But, I mean,
yes.
But I mean, they're both horrible. And another thing is about Bernie Sanders, if you look at all of his stuff with the VA and how much he wanted to help all the people who haven't had enough funding, this all goes back to funding. People don't
right.
want to pay, all these people who fought in these wars, they don't want to pay when they get injured. That's what it comes down to. And Bernie Sanders had to compromise with all the other Republicans to get these bills passed that finally happened. But he was the one that was leading that, and he did have
right.
to compromise. But, I mean, the end result was a good thing. It was the best thing that he could get out of it. And so it's not always about always getting – you know, 100. This is going to be a slow process of,
right.
of you know, hopefully the move towards, you know, what Bernie Sanders and Joseph Stiglitz is talking about, you know, moving towards, you know, appreciating what has been going on in Scandinavia for the past 50 or 60 years. And
John, let me stop you right there. Say this. That is where we come in. We have to actually go through the lies. When we have to break that cycle where people just say, they hear Scandinavia, they hear Europe, they hear socialism, and immediately they close off. We have to change that so that we make the path to that more possible. But look, we're running out of time, so give me a closing statement, John.
Good show. I'm very hopeful that you know, the TPP is gonna be shut down, and I think that's really my biggest hope, and also that populism will be, you know, will show that people are going to believe in it. I think it's already starting to happen, you know, with the Democratic
yes.
Party, and I just hope it continues. And I hope Bernie Sanders continues to get more support.
Thank you very much, John. Give me your closer, Greg.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you, Egberto, in terms of nationalizing the commons, things like utilities, the financial systems, and those kinds of things. They should not be for profit. Nor should healthcare. The kinds of things
right.
that you need in order to live should not be delivered to society under for-profit mm-hmm. motives. That's just in my mind, in the 21st century, that's barbaric thinking.
Yes,
and
it
frankly,
is.
Again, now when you know when I asked you for your examples of compromise, I'm not sure I heard one, but that's okay because you know we'll do this again next week. I'm just sick
right.
and tired, and I'm fed up. With the whole notion that what I need to do is try to have some sort of a civil dialogue with the people who support the likes of Paul Ryan or Ted Cruz or any of those other assholes on the right. Because that's a colossal waste of time.
I hear you, Greg. Greg, we're going to talk about this again. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening to one more week of Politics Done Right. I'm Egberto Willis, your host. Be back next week because we will be here. Guys, have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.